to play me latest chart topper. It's called Me Fans Are Stupid Pigs.
The following training video contains performances by highly trained professional criminals.
I think the message to psychos, fanatics, murderers, nutcases all over the world is do not mess with suburbanites because, frankly, we're just not going to take it anymore.
What are you doing out in the middle of nowhere?
Well, I had to get that there crossroads last midnight. Sell my soul to the devil.
What'd the devil give you for your soul, Tommy?
Well, they taught me to play this here guitar real good.
Brighton, I bid you welcome. I'm gonna tell you what happened last night. Walking down the street about a quarter to nine, I saw the thing coming out of the sky. The nibbling at my neck about a once or twice. Dracula, he's a good friend of mine. If I ever catch him, I'd skin him alive. Burn him with my baby and kissing him too. I'm gonna kill him and sell him to the zoo. Crack him in the jaw and
Ladies and gentlemen, we are in the Great Hall of the Institute of Technology in Zurich, Switzerland. As you have already read in the newspapers, a most amazing discovery has been made in this most peaceful of countries. It seems that Dr. Victor Frankenstein, once thought to be a character in a story, did actually exist and created what we have come to call his monster. The purpose of this meeting today is to hear, for the first time, the actual voice of the monster. Strange as it may seem, Dr. Frankenstein made crude recordings of the monster's voice. The machine had to be rebuilt from Frankenstein's plans under the direction of Dr. Heinrich Eronius, the famed electronics engineer and dean of the university here. Many of the scientists who have come today are convinced that this is a hoax, but are here only because of the reputation of Dr. Eronius. The machine stands before us on the stage. It's a huge thing looking something like a bad dream out of a science fiction story. Two speakers are on either side of it. The recordings themselves are now being brought in. They look like oversized tape reels. A technician is now placing one on the machine. Dr. Eronius signals for silence. The lights are going down. The red indicator light on the machine has just gone on. And we are about to hear Frankenstein's monster speak for the first time.
So different from the little ones I see, the ones that scream and run from me. Strange to know why I frighten them, but not so strange to want to crush them, to feel them in my hands, to tighten my fingers and see them die. What is there about remembering? Can the little ones, the humans, remember the night they came into the world? The monster can. There was darkness. All black. Cold. What did he make me from? From what grave did I come? Of what evil mixture was I compounded? In me the dead past of murderers comes to life. I have the strength of many men. Gave me life. Where is he? Where is Dr. Frankenstein? There's no place to hide, Dr. Frankenstein. No door to keep you from me. Out in here, Dr. Frankenstein? No place is far from me. Dr. Frankenstein. But I will come for you. I am your death, Dr. Frankenstein, your master. I have but one purpose, to end your life. Escape if you can, Dr. Frankenstein! What do you call your monster? You never gave me a name, but I have yours. I am called Frankenstein's monster. What a name you've added to the ghosts and the ghouls, the things that haunt and frighten, to the phantoms of the mind. But I am real. See? See? It hurts. I feel. I live.
I speak.
I hear my words. I am the monster tied to you forever, the hell that can only free you by giving you death. That's too easy for you. Too kind. Too gentle. While you live, you suffer. I see now that's my purpose. My only revenge. Frankenstein! I give you the gift. Time to understand the horror you've created. And for myself, I will amuse myself with terror and murder.
That ends the first of what I can only call the tape recordings of the monster's voice. The technicians are threading another spool into the machine, and shortly we'll hear the second part of this amazing voice from the past. From the recordings, it's obvious that the monster has broken loose and is now free to rampage through the peaceful Swiss countryside. The doctor is signaling for silence.
Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall. A splotch, a blotch, be careful of the blob. Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall. A splotch, a blotch, be careful of the blob. Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall. A splotch, a blotch, be careful of the blob. Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall. A splotch, a blotch, be careful of the blob.
beware of the blob, it creeps.
Yeah. Thank you. For three at Dracula's house by the sea. The wolfman was there, the monster was there. The only normal person there was me. A vampire named Perkins was so very fond of small gherkins. While she served the tea, she ate 43, which pickled her internal workings. Scalpels go on the left with the pitchforks, Igor! Igor! What a swimmer is Dracula's daughter, but they use her pool less than they ought to. When her guests dive in there, they just disappear. 'Cause she uses acid, not water! For dessert, there was cardboard confetti and broom straws from a witch named Betty. I first frowned upon it, but with ketchup on it, it tastes very much like spaghetti.
me. Going to party.
Me too. What happened to the party?
Hey, let's grab those instruments and show them what a real song is like.
Yeah, this man is terrible. Yeah. Let's show them. Give me those drumsticks. Give me that guitar.
Pepperoni. Oh, pepperoni.
In a haunting house. Still made up of my mind today. Nothing was going to drive me away. When I see something to give me the creep, had one big eye on something else. Stood a rest here when I done the creep. He did a hunch right off of me. Maybe hoping would be sound like a drum. Say you'll be here when the morning comes. Say you'll be here when the morning comes. Be right here, ain't gonna run. Boss is half, say you know I'm boss. Well, there ain't no ain't gonna run me off. Well, in my kitchen, my stove was a hunching hot. Coffee was falling in the pot. Grease had melted in my hand. And a hunk of meat in my hand. But now there's a place that's good and mean. Hold a hot stove with the faucet rain. See that pot off again the gap. He drank a hot coffee right from the spout. He brought me right from my hand. Drank a hot stove with the fine rain. See it through me now, you better run.
When the morning comes,
say, yeah, when the morning comes, be right here, ain't gonna run. Boss is a house, you know I'm boss. Well, ain't no ain't gonna run me.
I suppose most excavators would confess to a feeling of awe, almost embarrassment, when they break into a tomb closed and sealed by pious hands so many centuries ago. 33 centuries had passed since human feet last trod the floor on which we stood. and yet the signs of recent life were around us. A half-filled bowl of mortar, a blackened lamp, the chips of wood left on the floor by a careless carpenter. We had penetrated two chambers, but when we came to a golden shrine with doors closed and sealed, we realized that we were in the presence of the dead king. We were to witness a spectacle such as no other man in our times had been privileged to see. I carefully cut the cord, removed the precious seal, drew back the bolts, and opened the door. When a second shrine was revealed, even more brilliant in workmanship than the last. With intense excitement, I went forward and unbolted the inner door. They slowly swung open, and there, filling the entire area within, stood an immense yellow quartzite sarcophagus. It effectually barred any further progress until we could raise the lid. Then a decisive moment. None of us but felt the solemnity of the occasion. In a dead silence, the huge lid, weighing over a ton and a quarter, was raised from its bed. Light shone into the sarcophagus. But how disappointing. The contents were completely covered by linen shrouds. But as the last shroud was rolled back, a gasp of wonderment escaped our lips. So gorgeous was the sight that met our eyes. A golden effigy of the young king of magnificent workmanship filled the whole of the interior. This was but the lid of a series of three coffins nested one within the other, enclosing the mortal remains of the young king Tutankhamun. Laid on that golden outer lid was a tiny wreath of flowers, as it pleased us to think, the last farewell offering of the widowed girl queen to her husband. Among all that regal splendor, everywhere the glint of gold, there was nothing so beautiful as those few withered flowers. They told us what a short period 3,300 years really was. But yesterday, and the morrow.
And when the sun goes down and the moon comes up, I turn into a teenage Goo Goo Mop. Yeah, I cruise through the city and I roam the streets. Show up the Goo Goo Mob. I'm the ninth head hunter looking for some head. Well, away our body underneath that head. Yeah, I'll get you, baby, with a little luck. Cause I'm a teenage tiger.
Operator in town. While the other kids were digging Dick Clark from coast to coast, I was a digging Dr. Kildare, like man you know the most. Even when I was in grade school, I had that medical look. I never got past the appendix whenever I opened a book. Scalpel.
Scalpel.
Forceps.
Forceps.
Suture.
Suture.
Oops, anesthetic.
Anesthetic.
Whenever I went out dancing to make my night complete, I brought along my stethoscope. Man, you hear the wildest beat. One night the band was playing I've Got You Under My Skin. I scared a fella half to death when I said, may I cut in? I was a teenage brain surgeon, a teenage brain surgeon, a rockin' rollin' brain surgeon, the sharpest operator in town.
Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, Suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door. Only this and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember, it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow. Sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here forevermore. The silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more. Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. Sir, said I, or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore, but the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce for sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning. Soon again I heard a tapping, something louder than before. Surely, said I, surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment of this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind and nothing more. Open here I flung the shutter when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon the bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird, beguiling my sad fancy into smiling by the grim stern decorum of the countenance it wore, though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven. Ghastly, grim, and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore, tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Much I marveled this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door, bird or beast, upon the sculpted bust above his chamber door, with such name as Nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on that placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further than he uttered, not a feather then he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before, on the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, nevermore. Startled at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken, doubtless, said I, what it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master, whose unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster till his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hopes that melancholy burden bore of never, nevermore. But the raven, still beguiling all my sad soul into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking nevermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease, reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er she shall press. Ah, nevermore. Then methought the air grew denser, plumed from an unseen censer sung by seraphim, whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by these angels he hath sent thee respite, respite and nepenthe from my memories of Lenore. Quaff, oh, quaff this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, whether tempter sent or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels name Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest of the night's Plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes of all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul, from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor, shall be lifted nevermore.
We have just discovered an important note from space. The Martians plan to throw a dance for all the human race.
I'm
a confession. I like movies that give me a fright. If the subject is horror, I've got to see more, or I won't be contented all night. You may call it my ghoulish obsession. It's a subject on which I get chatty. But the worst one, it seems, haunting all of my dreams, was the cockroach that ate Cincinnati. I've seen ghouls and hobgoblins and witches, and some moth-eaten werewolves with fangs. There were creatures that chattered and others that clattered, and Japanese monsters with fangs. Frankenstein gives me the shakes, and Count Dracula's driving me batty. But they're not on a par with the worst one by far, the cockroach that ate Cincinnati. Oh, he must have needed a seltzer. It's amazing how much he got down. For lunch he just chewed up a suburb or two, and for dinner he ate the whole town. Willard just sent me out laughing. I thought Ben looked a little bit ratty.
Watch, sorry about that.
But they're not half as bad as the worst scare I've had. The cockroach that ate Cincinnati. Oh, my heart nearly stopped. He will never be topped. The cockroach that ate Cincinnati. Olay!
Olay? That's dumb.
two or three in every scene.